And I'm Thorn Dreyer, and this is RAG Radio. We come your way every Friday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m. on KOOP, your community radio station in Austin. We're also rebroadcast now at 10 a.m. every Sunday on WFTE 90.3 FM in Mount Cobb, Pennsylvania, and 105.7 FM in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So welcome to all the folks out there in Pennsylvania. Love to have you. Glad you're here. We're also streamed live on the internet, and we have fans, people listening to us all over the world. So welcome. Welcome to RAG Radio. If you want to get in touch with us, we might even check the email during the show. But if you want to make any contact with us, we're at ragradio@koop.org. Ragradio@koop.org. All of our shows are up on archives. You'll be able to find this show and all the rest of them at Internet Archive. Just search RAG Radio. And then when you get there, you can sort by date, and you'll be the latest at the top. Okay, Tracy Schultz. My engineer and yes. Compadre, how are you, sir?
Doing quite fine. Doing quite fine.
Well, cool. We're so glad you're here, as always. Bob Cheevers is the Texas Music Awards 2011 Singer-Songwriter of the Year. An Emmy-winning recording artist, Cheevers was also a winner at the Kerrville and Napa Valley Music Festivals, had pop hits in the 60s and 70s while working in L.A., and had top 20 hits on the Americana charts. Cheevers, who spent 16 years in the Nashville music industry before moving to Austin in 2009, grew up on the Mississippi Delta, and much of his blues-flavored work has its roots in the lifestyle along the rivers of the South. We will talk, and Bob will perform. There's one little quote that I just wanted to share with you guys about Bob and his work. This is from Ray Wiley Hubbard. He says, Bob Cheevers is one cool scarecrow gypsy poet who writes and sings the romantic, beautiful truth. When he releases a record, I listen. Bob Cheevers, welcome to RAG Radio.
Thank you. I always love to hear that quote by Ray. He is such a goofball, and I love him. And he comes up with the wildest things, you know.
Yeah, he's a trip. He's a trip. Okay, there's a lot of stuff for us to talk about. And for one thing, it's like an odyssey through the music capitals of the country, you know, from Memphis to L.A. to Nashville to Austin, and through a number of eras. So it's fun. I mean, the history will be fun to talk about. I want to talk about your early days and the ways that your experiences informed your music and how you became a songwriter and how that worked. I want to talk about your grandmother. Y'all will find out what that's all about in a minute. Talk about your work with the Peppermint Trolley Company in L.A. and the theme songs you guys did for Love American Style and the Brady Bunch. Mm-hmm. How very cool. Right now, you're in Austin. You've been here since, what, 2009?
It'll be 4 years in October. I can't count backwards like that.
I can't either. Once you get back to a certain time, it all becomes a big maze, a haze, a fuzzy whatever. You just won the Singer-Songwriter of the Year award, which is certainly very neat. What are you doing now in Austin, and how do you like being here? And what's the Texas Tall Tales? Tell us about that, too, which is kind of like a travelogue through Texas. I mean, a spiritual travelogue or something.
I moved here, almost 4 years ago, and I didn't move here to be a Texas songwriter, as in the standard fare of the so many wonderful songwriters here. I moved here to be a songwriter living in Texas, and just by way of living, I came across a lot of interesting stories, wonderful people who started telling me stories about Texas. Texas is probably the most unique state of the union, I'm guessing. Texas people are so proud of their history and it's particularly here in Austin. I'm sure the Dallas people are too, Houston and so forth. But Austin's got such a huge musical community, and that's why I came here. It was the next natural step after growing up in Memphis, getting a heart full of soul, and then going to L.A. and being in the pop thing there, and then moving to Nashville and being in the country music thing. And I kind of got put out to pasture I put myself out to pasture because I was really tired of the Nashville scene and writing for a publisher who said, why don't we do this and do it this way? My whole career has been wonderful in that my publishers have let me do what I do because they like it. It's not that that's made me very successful in my writing, but what I do has been, it's just turned into this 40-year career, and it's still going, and it's actually, this is the best it's ever been right now.
Well, it's very, has it been sort of a rebirth for you being here? I mean,
reinvention
or something?
A freedom that I've never experienced before. The last things that I did in Nashville were the stepping stones that led me to, I think, finding my own voice as a writer and really finding my own voice as a person. And then at which point it seemed like Nashville, I had grown past that because there are a lot of wonderful people there, great writers. But in order to survive in the Nashville writing community, you really have to adhere to strict writing rules, all of which are fine. You know, it's a career and a business and a job. But I found that for me, I needed to be a whole lot more liberal about my writing and my lifestyle. And coming to Austin has given me that opportunity, and the people here have encouraged me to be me. I don't know what's up with that, but
that's sort of something endemic in the trip here, I think.
Yeah, what do you guys want out of me anyway? To be myself, or is that it?
I don't know. To an extent, maybe. Okay, tell me about some of the songs that you've written on that. I guess your last album was the Texas Tall Tales.
Right. Album. Yeah. As I said, people started telling me stories about history of Texas, and one of them was called Texas is an Only Child, and I had a couple of verses in there that originally were about the Branch Davidians and about Kennedy and about some things that some of my friends like George Ensley and Tim Henderson, when they listened to it, they said, you don't want to be singing that stuff, Bob. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, we kind of don't want to hear about that anymore down here in Texas. And I said, well, that's too bad because that happened, so I'm going to write about it. But then I thought, I had second thoughts, and I've managed to sort of understand you people down here and get what you're talking about and where you live, you know, emotionally and historically. And that's made a big difference about how I look at Texas and about how I've written about Texas. And not that I try to write about Texas, it's just that I'm here and there's so much incoming. It's such a powerful place to be, particularly Austin for me in a musical sense, but it really goes together well.
Okay, why don't you sing something for us, something you've written about Texas
okay.
from the new album?
All right, let me
think. Sing whatever you were.
Well, no,
to do,
I got it? A perfect song for that. It's okay. It's called Luckenbach, and you know Jerry Jeff had that one, and I went to Luckenbach once when I moved here over 3 years ago, and was so taken by it in at least a couple of ways. One is what's the big deal? But then we drove away, and before we got home, I had written this song about Luckenbach, Texas, and I thought, well, so that's the deal. Well, this is Luckenbach, Texas. Down at the end of an old country road, there's a place where you can lighten your load. Just hang around and drink a Clone Star beer. There's not a better place to be down here. It's like a town in some old picture show, a cool oasis where bandidos go, familiar faces where time moves slow. The sound of music makes you tap your toes. That's what I love about Luckenbach. People come to hang around and talk. They get the swagger in the way they walk. That's what I love about a Luckenbach. Nobody's bothered by hands on a clock. Front porch old folks and armchairs rock. Windows open and doors unlock. That's what I love about a Luckenbach, Texas. I spent a month here on a Sunday afternoon, wound up howling at the Texas moon, watching the sunrise with a beautiful girl. There's not a better place to be in this world. The human race has a long way to go. And just in case you wonder how I know, I've been to Luckenbach in early spring. It's paradise, it's the real thing. That's what I love about Luckenbach. People come to hang around and talk. They get to swagger in the way they walk. That's what I love about Luckenbach. Nobody's bothered by hands on a clock. Front porch old folks and armchairs rock. Windows open and doors unlock. That's what I love about Luckenbach. Windows open and doors unlock. That's what I love about. That's what I love about. That's what I love about Luckenbach.
It's funny. It's funny, Bob Cheevers. It's wonderful stuff. When you said that you learned that the human race has a long way to go, I thought you were going to say Luckenbach taught you where it still hasn't, you know, where it's coming from. But
whatever.
No, it's whatever. It's all the same. This album actually did some went somewhere on the Americana charts. Is that right?
It did. Number 28 in America, and it was top 10 in Europe. I made it and then went right to Europe. I've toured Europe 10 years straight, doing 50 or 60 concerts each tour, and this record happened to come up for the last tour. And they love Texas over there. Interestingly, before I went on this last tour, people here in Texas said, Europeans just love Texas, and Austin in particular. So I took it upon myself, out of curiosity, to ask my audiences, when you think about America, a music city in America, what city do you think of first? And they most always said Memphis. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because of Elvis and the profound impact that he had on the world, the music thing. And when I think of Texas, you know, I think of Stevie Ray and Aaron Ray and all the wonderful artists who've come out of here. But it's a long way from those guys to Elvis.
Yeah, it's a long trip, isn't it?
It's a long way, and yeah. And I think that's what accounts for that, the response about Memphis.
It's interesting because, well, after we're going to go to a break in a minute, but we'll come back, and I want to go back to the roots and how you started. But the whole Europe trip is very interesting because I've always known, I mean, there's always a great audience in Europe for good music, and I've known artists who, wonderful artists, especially jazz musicians, who couldn't find an audience in this country and were just, you know, loved in European music.
That's the reason I started going, because we were talking earlier outside about me chasing my tail for so many years for fame and fortune and feeling like I never achieved what the level that I was looking for. And finally, when I was able to let that go, one of the things that came around was Europe. And Europe has so much higher regard for artists and art than any place in America except Texas. Coming to Texas, I've realized you guys down here, there's a Texas Music Commission that's part of the governor's office. That happens nowhere else in America. So insofar as Europe and Texas go, they're a lot alike in that regard, and that's one of the reasons I'm really happy to be here.
So do you think, as a life lesson, do you think maybe that when you quit chasing your tail to try to become famous, then maybe you, and then you turn to the real art, then maybe you have a chance to actually become famous through the art?
I would
because
say
you're
that,
not trying to.
Yeah,
trying.
And I would say that's true about anything in life, you know.
That's right.
But in my case, and that has flowed over into my whole life, but yeah, whatever it was that snapped me out of the pursuit, the daily onboard pursuit for fame and fortune, and you know, I've had my moments and times and accolades, but it's sort of like a drug, you know, you do a drug, and when it's over, you want another one because it's not. Well, let's not go there.
You want a new drug.
Yeah. Huey.
Huey. Huey. Okay. All right. We're talking with Bob Cheevers. I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio.
put something in the water from the town of my youth. That accounts for the weird little habit some folks called uncouth. Started back in high school, continued today. My thing about undergarments got a little carried away. Well, underpants, underpants, love my girlfriend's underpants. Underpants, underpants, I just love my girlfriend's underpants. I dig to her dirty clothes every time.
Okay, a little body here, and in fact, he has some of those underpants with him. You say that when you do that song, they throw them at you?
In Europe, yeah, particularly Scotland. And it's the Tom Jones thing, you know. I was very surprised one day, one night when I was playing and hurling through the air, came this, I'll hold it up close to the mic so you can see it, came this pair of knickers, they call them knickers over there, and I saved them, and I use them to wipe my guitar neck with, but sometimes it turns into a guitar case full of that stuff, and I always dump it before I go through customs for fear anybody will think
they'll really wonder
strangely of me. Not that they don't anyway.
Can't imagine that. Okay, let's go to the early days. Tell us about your grandmother first.
Well, I grew up in a musical family, which I didn't realize at the time. She played guitar and piano, and on our wall all of my life hung this gorgeous picture of my grandmother holding a guitar that I would love to have. Now, it looks like an old Martin, a small Martin, but she played piano as I was growing up. I never saw a guitar. We found an old banjo in the attic. So she played piano. My mom was a radio star in the 20s and 30s in Memphis on WREC, a program called The Breakfast Club. And so I certainly got a daily dose of piano voice stuff from my mom and my grandfather. And my aunt also played piano and sang. And it never occurred to me that was anything but what was going on in my life. I didn't learn to play the piano. My mom didn't offer to teach me. And then I moved to California, and a few years later came back and sat down at my mom's piano and played. And she said, "Where did you learn that?" And I just figured it out.
Just watching, listening to you.
It was a great time to be young in the 50s, late 40s and 50s. I'm 67, so I was born in 43, and my mom's music was...
You're an old guy because you got a whole year on me. So
yeah, but boy, we look great, you know, for all the plastic surgery and...
Botox.
In fact, I just came from the Botox place.
Yeah, right, yeah, gotcha. Okay, so you were where? Where did you grow up?
In Memphis.
In Memphis, per se.
And about when I was old enough to know what was going on, Elvis exploded. Jerry Lee and Johnny Cash and those guys, the Million Dollar Quartet, Roy Orbison was the fourth member. And right under my nose in my hometown, and I'd stand on the corner waiting for the bus after school, and Elvis would drive by in his 57 Continental Mark IV, and I'd wave, and he'd wave back because he was a nice guy, and I was there every day, and Graceland was right down the road, so frequently he'd drive by and he'd see me. I was a little boy standing there by myself, and he'd wave at me, and it was like I had a friend in Elvis, you know, like having a friend in Jesus. And then I wound up during between college years working for an organization that collected 50 grand a year each year from Elvis, and we went out to his house, and I told this the other day on another program about standing there, and my executive director Elvis started to hand him the check, and he said, "No, give it to Bob." And so I looked at Elvis and I said, "Thank you, but what I would really like more than anything else is to use your bathroom." So I got to use Elvis's bathroom, and I'm just very proud of that.
That's very exciting.
Fascinating story, huh?
Okay, so you when did you start writing songs? Because one of the things you've said is that your experience along the Mississippi Delta and in the South and with the characters that you met and the people you met informed the way you wrote and informed the way you thought about
my
music.
Grandmother told me from as long as I could remember back stories about her father owning slaves, and they had a little plantation. I mean, it was that was not uncommon at all. And
that's not that many generations ago, is it?
No. yeah. And then there's another story. But so all that stuff stuck in my mind somewhere in the
room. That also involves counting backwards again. So
yeah. You're trying to trick me again, aren't you?
I know.
And all that stuff stuck in my mind. And when I was in college, we'd sit there between classes and listen to the jukebox. And we started a little combo, and I thought I'd try to write some songs for that, and they were just terrible songs. I'm sure they were. I wish I had copies of them now, but probably God saved me from that. So, and it started about 62 or 63, and I wrote a bunch of songs, and then when I got out of college, I moved to California, and because the Beatles and the Beach Boys were on Capitol Records, I went to work for Capitol Records, and I said, I'll do anything, just let me work for your company. And I was the third floor stockroom supervisor. And because I ran the Xerox machine, which back then was the size of a Buick, I was the only guy in the building that could operate the machine. And anybody from the president to the janitor had to come to me to make copies. And I made friends with everybody, including the lady in publishing. And I gave her a tape of some songs of mine. And a producer was in her office when she played the songs, and he said, who is that? And she said, it's the kid down on the third floor in the stock room. And he said, that's the voice I've been looking for. And within a few days, I had a major label deal, and a few weeks we'd made a record, and a few more weeks I was driving down Sunset Boulevard in my Volkswagen and heard myself on the radio and had to pull over because it was so thrilling. And it's kind of been downhill from there.
That's very cool. It's interesting because L.A., what was that music scene like then?
Wow.
Because that was a music center.
It was red hot. I was in this group called, my producer had a group called the Peppermint Trolley Company, and the guys in the group were the Farragher brothers, and they hated it because they quit. So he reformed the group with me and three other guys, and we did this pop drivel stuff that at that point I was just glad to have a record deal living in L.A.
You're glad to have somebody paying you for drivel.
Yeah, this is paradise, you know. But the Jefferson Airplane, the Buffalo Springfield, the Strawberry Alarm Clock, the Doors, that's what the scene was like in my 60s life.
Okay, so you guys did theme songs for Love American Style and the Brady Bunch. How, you know?
We the label that we were on was a Paramount label, and Paramount owned not only the movie studio, but they owned a bunch of record labels, and they did TV shows, including Love American Style and the Brady Bunch. And I say this in quotes, famous acts were asked to come sing theme songs to their TV shows, and we had a hit record at the time, the Peppermint Trolley Company did, so we got to do both of those theme songs. And there were four of us, and we were, that was back in the days of the, you know, when funny things were getting smoked, and we were pretty out there and having to record this stuff in front of an 87-piece orchestra live. And when we'd make a mistake, which was about every three or four bars, because the memory wasn't working, they'd have to stop, and the orchestra people got really angry. The producer, all the people were in a huge studio, and they'd have to rewind the tape, which had not only the video on it, but the audio. There was no fast forward or fast rewind, so we had to wait and wait, and it went into what's called triple time and a half, and they called it golden time. So there was a lot of money to be made.
Okay, I think it's time you sang for us again.
Sorry?
I think it's time that we heard something else.
Sang
another song.
This
we've gone long enough.
This won't have been played, I bet, 40 years or more on radio. This would be 1968. So, friends, you're hearing something that ears haven't heard. Your young ears probably haven't heard this.
Hit it.
Oh, wait a minute. Am I going to play it?
Yeah. Oh, I thought that.
Oh, I thought you were going to play
oh,
that.
Oh, no,
Love
we're going to do that. No, we're going to do that when we go
I'm
out.
Sorry.
Right? I want you to play something now.
Okay.
We'll do that in just a minute when we go to our second break.
Well, then
Then forget what he just said.
Yeah, well, you guys
but remember it in a minute.
You won't have heard this song either because it's brand new. It's called "Every Doubt Has a Shadow," and sort of on the offshoot of the Shadow of a Doubt kind of thing. I don't know where these things come from. Hard rain making loud sounds, God rays through gray clouds. Sundown comes slowly, shadows behind you and me. Cold wind through our door, don't bother me anymore. Our love's like a slow train, rolling through a hard rain. Every doubt has a shadow. Colors fade on a dying rose. Every wall needs a window. Everyone needs a love that grows. And every doubt has a shadow. Faith moves mountains, that's for sure. Power of love endures. Winds of change will always blow. What remains are things we know. Shelter of a higher power keeps us safe in our darkest hour. Mountaintop where we both see love between you and me. Every doubt has a shadow. Colors fade on a perfect rose. Every wall needs a window. Everyone needs a love that grows. And every doubt, yes, every doubt has a shadow. Every shadow has a darker side. Every darkness needs a place to hide. Every love has room to grow. Everyone has the right to know that every doubt, yes, every doubt has a shadow. Every now and then I stop and think, is this quicksand and am I gonna sink? Will these doubts swallow me whole? I say no and just let them go. Thoughts that go inside my brain, this cannot be all in vain. Our love's like a slow train, rolling through a hard rain. Every doubt has a shadow. Colors fade on a perfect rose. Every wall needs a window. Every love needs a room to grow. And every doubt, yes, every doubt, every doubt has a shadow. Every doubt has a shadow.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who used Elvis Presley's bathroom, Bob Cheevers, and that's a brand new.
Yes, it's brand new.
Are you doing a lot of writing now?
Yes, I am. I went through a couple of years of probably for 30 years I wrote 50 or more songs a year, and then I slowed down to 20 or 30, and then the last couple of years I've toured so much that I have written maybe, I don't know, a dozen or 15 a year. But the good news is, whereas back in the 50 a year era, maybe a dozen of them were good, and now in the dozen year era, they're hopefully there aren't any throwaways.
The percentage has gotten much higher.
I can't afford any throwaways now.
Okay. So you're in L.A. What else did you do? Did you do much recording? Were you writing a lot then?
I was writing a lot. that was the period where I won an Emmy for, I've done a couple of music videos for previous records, and the two of them won a total of 8 Emmys, one of which was the musical composition of the year for a song called Big City Gambler, which, by the way, Elvis had on his short list of songs to do before he died on the toilet. So there's something very apocryphal about those.
About Elvis's toilet?
It does. So a lot of that stuff. I wrote a lot of songs with some jazzer friends of mine that I could never perform because I can't play the chords. I'd write them and then give them to them, and then we'd record them, and none of those songs were ever released. One day I'd like to do it. In fact, I have what's called the Cheever Songs Archive Series. It's 8 CDs, one of which is a double CD, and they represent my writing during a 20-year period when most of that jazzy stuff was happening, a lot of really beautiful ballads and story songs, and that was sort of before I started making CDs. We made records, and then
I remember
CDs
records,
came along.
Spin some wax. Yeah. When did you leave Los Angeles and go to Nashville? And what inspired that move?
Well, my music has probably because Neil Young and the Buffalo Springfield and Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young, those folks. Their style of music was probably had the most effect on my writing style, and that was kind of country rock, we called it back then. And so later on in the 80s, country rock started becoming Nashville country, and lots of people from L.A., including the record producers and studio musicians and studios, started moving to Nashville. And my publisher at the time in L.A. said, why don't you move to Nashville, because we're pitching you as a writer and an artist, and you need to put your personality and face with your songs, and so you can get there and connect the dots, because it's really it's very political, and you have to climb the ladder and stand in line and wait and take your turn. So I agreed to do that, and I'm really glad I did. I was there 16 years. I learned a ton about when I got there. I thought I had it going on, but it turned out I wasn't writing Nashville style. Which, in a short sentence, would be 15-second intro, first minute, you're into the chorus, drive the chorus home three or four times, the title home three or four times in the chorus. There's a beginning, middle, and ending to the song, and you're out in 3 minutes and 20 seconds. How do you do that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I learned how to do it. I'm not asking you.
Yeah, well, I sure wouldn't know. Okay, we're talking with Bob Cheevers, and we're in Nashville right now. We'll come back to Nashville in a minute, and then we'll get to Austin. And right now, we're going to listen to what you were talking about before, something that folks haven't had an opportunity to hear. Probably a lot of people have never heard. Tracy, take it away. I'm Thorn Dreyer. This is Rag Radio, and my guest is singer-songwriter, Texas Music Awards Singer-Songwriter of the Year, Bob Cheevers. That was something a little different that you were doing then. What were we just listening to?
That was a theme song to Love American Style, which was recorded in 1968. I think we were talking about that a minute ago during our band Peppermint Trolley Company did that song, and that was me singing lead. And it just, my producer at the time, he liked my high voice, and he pushed me all the time to sing really high. And it was only after touring Europe for 10 years and singing a lot that my voice dropped. Now it's really low.
It's really, really low. It was. Gordon, what was Love American Style? People, you did things for that in the Brady Bunch, and I think people know what the Brady Bunch was. What was Love American
Style? Love American Style was a TV show, and it had each week it had three segments, and each segment was about how a couple met and just goofy stuff. It was one of the early sitcoms.
It was an actual sitcom.
Yeah. And it was really stupid, you know, looking back on it. And there was, I remember...
It was a more innocent time, Bob.
It was, certainly was. But, you know, as we were talking earlier, that's when certain things were happening. And Southern California was where it really exploded. And my publisher's office...
You mean things that made you giggle when you saw a show like that?
Maybe, and also made your mind work in way in areas that it never had worked before.
Right.
But... I remember him telling me we were at the east end of Sunset, his publishing office was, and he was telling me that down at the west end, he said, you kind of don't want to be affiliated with those people because it's a different ilk of people. And down at that other end were Jackson Brown, Neil Young, the Eagles, Joni Mitchell. So exactly the people that I wanted to be dealing with. And I kind of ignored his advice, and I went down the road, down west on Sunset, and I asked the guy who managed those folks if they would manage me, and very much to my surprise and joy, he said yes. So I wound up at points in my life sleeping in Joni Mitchell's bed and writing songs on her piano and feeling pretty in the in crowd. I'm not saying she was in her bed when I was sleeping. just saying.
You're just saying.
To get that straight out of here,
yeah,
so you
okay.
Don't get fined.
Okay.
But,
go ahead.
Well, there was just like in any city, in any thing you want to be thinking about, there were different areas of music and ways people approach life or their musical experience and. It was just I'd never known anything about that, and to be a kid from Memphis out there in Disneyland, I mean Hollywood being Disneyland, it was wild.
Yeah, were there any kind of crazy experiences you had in that regard, or that, you know, especially in contact with some of those musicians you're talking about? Other than sleeping on Joni Mitchell's bed,
probably. I can't think of anything right now that I could say without
on,
you
on air
being
yeah, without our having trouble
subject to a lot of money.
Okay, we were talking about the theme song, and you were mentioning that it was contractual that they had to have a new theme song every couple of years on television shows.
Yeah,
right?
In this case a new group had to sing the same theme song every 2 years. I don't know why that was, but our band, the Peppermint Trolley Company, sang it first. And then 2 years later, the Cow Seals sang it. And I forget the lady, the Cow Seal girl, she's now doing she's really great. Susan Cow Seal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
I met her last year at Folk Alliance a couple years ago. But it's sort of like being a kid and coming, you know, for people like David Crosby and Neil Young and Joni and all of us who kind of started out together, and then of course they went through the roof, and I wound up here at Co-op Radio with you guys.
Hey, we're the roof, dude.
And I'm glad to be here.
We're the cat's meow. Okay, so you had an experience. You played with Johnny Cash.
I did. Somewhere along the line, my record called Gettysburg to Graceland, which by the way has my grandmother's picture on it. My art director saw that picture hanging on my wall, and he said, that's the album cover. And I said, no, that's my grandmother. And anyway, it turned out to be the album cover, and it's been on billboards around the world. But he heard, I think his manager heard the record and played it for Johnny, and he said, get that boy over here. And,
get that boy over here.
So I was on the road with him, and the last, at one point, he dropped his guitar pick and bent over to pick it up, and he fell over, and he was in the ICU for, I think, 2 months after that, and that was the last, between that song he was going to play and his death, he sang only one song in between during those periods because he was too frail. But when I was 15, we did a talent show and won the talent show singing Johnny Cash's song Big River. And 40 years later, he recorded my song River of Jordan. So the rivers kind of run through our lives. But he was a hero of mine because he was there in the 50s when I was a kid. And to meet this guy the first time backstage, the first show, and looking up at him, he was 10 feet tall at least. And he had on a long coat, and he was pretty weak and frail then, and his manager and a handler would walk him over to the corner of the stage, take the long coat out, give him a little shove, and he'd go out and grab the microphone. He'd say, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash," and he'd start playing. And the only time he moved was when he'd turn around to ask his wife to come sing with him. So that's my Johnny Cash.
So did you start wearing all black?
No.
Okay, did you have any contact with Willie Nelson?
Haven't yet.
Back then, though, there.
You know, people say every time I sing how much I sound like him. And we played down at Green Oma's. This was a few months ago, and apparently, I forget who was playing at Green Hall, but I was walking. There was a whole line of people waiting to get into Green Hall, and as I would walk by, people would say, "Hey, there's Willie. There he is. Hey, Willie." And I don't know. Do you think I look like Willie? Younger and better looking?
Well, yeah, you know, and you've got the hair. And, yeah. You know, the vibes, the aura.
It's been fun, though. Whether I sound like him or look like him or not, he's another hero of mine, and I hope I get to meet him someday.
Okay, so you came to Austin partly because you were a little bit burnt out in Nashville. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd sort of done that, been there, and you felt that you needed needed to go somewhere where you could really use your talent.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... I just felt like I had done all that I wanted to do and really that was possible for me to do in Nashville. To be honest, the Nashville experience, while it was incredibly enriching and helpful to me in my career because I gained a whole toolbox full of songwriting tools to use that I don't always use, but if I need them, they're there. But I wanted to be free of the commercial thing, but also about that time, the dinosaur major labels were beginning to fall away and crumble, and I got an independent record deal with For Gettysburg to Graceland, and that record sort of took off, and sort of the next horizon, my LA record guy said, "You need to move to Nashville." Seemed like I do what people suggest I should do, and then it's always been the right thing, so... If you got any suggestions for me where to go next.
I'm not going to tell you where to go.
But it sure has worked here for me. And I was at the end of my 10-year touring Europe phase, and I decided a year ago not to tour Europe, to concentrate on America, and particularly Texas, and focus and kind of get back on the radar in this country and in Texas. And that's... what's happened, and the result is that award that I won last month.
There's a lot of attention nationally and even internationally right now on the music scene in Texas, and especially in Austin, right?
Well, I think so. Because, yes, you're right, and I think so because it's so authentic. Nashville, while maybe the market for country music is huge and it's commercial, the thing about Austin is it's a heartful market with a heartful audience, and you know, you put those side by side, Nashville and Austin, and it's apples and oranges. I mean, there's absolutely almost no comparison at all, except it's music. But and not that there aren't great writers in Nashville who write from the heart, but generally when you listen to, or I listen to country radio, it's contrived music written for an artist to sound like this.
Yeah,
and I just couldn't do it anymore.
Okay, well, are you going to play something else for us?
Yes, I will. This is another fairly new song called "Girl on the Early News." I've done the Channel 8 Austin Live show a number of times, and Michelle Vaez was the hostess lady, Ray Benson's girlfriend, and she's gorgeous, and she inspired this. It's not about you, Michelle. It's just you've heard it anyway, but... Ray Benson, he's also another guy that's about 10 feet tall. So.
Yeah.
She's the evening anchor on the early news. Homegrown girl with a crooked smile. And I'm in a band that plays Texas blues. I see her at the station once in a while. I work in the office, I sell airtime to Walmart, Firestone. I do my job, then go home at night to my house where I live alone. I get a cold beer, turn on my TV. Hey, I watch her show religiously. In my little world, the only way to lose these Texas blues is dreaming of the girl on the early news. Mm-hmm. In her pretty little head, she doesn't think about me. Her sights are set on some network show. CBS, ABC, maybe cable TV. Hey, it don't really matter. She's just ready to go. She's a shining star in her own hometown, but her heart left long ago. High school queen with her head in the clouds, but each night when I go home, I get a cold beer, turn on my TV. Hey, I watch your show religiously. In my little world, the only way to lose these Texas blues is dreaming of the girl on the early news. Guys like me, the blues live on. And B.B. King, Stevie Ray Vaughan. I paid my dues and I found my muse in that dark-eyed girl on the early news. I get a cold beer, turn on my TV. Hey, I watch her show religiously. And my little world, the only way to lose these Texas blues, these Texas blues, is dreaming of the girl on the early news. Dreaming of the girl on the early news. Hey, I'm dreaming of the girl on the early news.
Texas Music Awards 2011 Singer-Songwriter of the Year, Bob Cheevers, here on Rag Radio. I'm Thorne Dreyer. And Bob, aren't you glad that that here in Austin, Texas, that we accept Memphis boys here and make them feel at home?
Y'all have been mighty nice to me.
Well, we do what we can, you know what I'm saying?
It's been a joy being in Texas, and particularly here at Co-op, because the folks... You know that some radio stations here in Austin sort of have lost, I don't know what you'd say, maybe the glint of...
authenticity.
Yeah, I'm sorry I got here right about the time that was going on, but you guys have taken up the mantle, lantern, or whatever you take up here, and carried that on.
Yeah. Well, I think, as in a lot of places in the country... radio stations, roots kind of radio stations, non-commercial radio stations, campus-oriented radio stations are losing a lot of their, being reprogrammed, reformatted, and we're losing a lot.
Yeah.
And it's something that people need to stand up and fight for, you know, because we, you know, radio has played just an incredibly important role.
Absolutely. The same thing is happening in America with corporations. They're not in it. They're in it for profits, not people. And radio stations, major stations, are in it for profit, and you have to have a format, and you have to play what the program. It's interesting that the programmers think they know what the people want to hear, even though the people are really wanting to hear different stuff.
You're right. Just as in this country, everything's being run by a few corporations. Yeah. The radio world is really that way.
It is. Yeah.
And it's there all. And, okay, we've just got a couple of minutes left. What are you doing now, and what's in the works, and how can people like find out? Is there any place people can go see you? But at least, where can they find you online?
I'm at bobcheevers.com. Tonight I'm at the Boathouse, which is 620 near 2222. Tomorrow night I'm at County Line out on 2222. Sunday at Ski Shores, and Monday at Pooty's.
Wow. And that's for those of you in Austin. And if you're not in Austin, there's a lot of stuff up online. Right?
Yes. By the way, there's 7 of us in Austin who won the Texas Music Awards. 7 people from Austin, and there will be a. Can I tell about this on?
Sure.
September 4th at Moody's, yeah. Momo's, there's going to be a show featuring those 7, most of the 7. Freddie Powers, who is an extraordinary writer in the world, is not doing so well, and he might not be there, but we'll cover his bases if he's not.
Okay, very cool. Bob Cheevers, and we've talked about this, the path from Memphis to L.A. Mm-hmm. to Nashville to Austin, and it's been great having you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been a lot of fun. Bob Cheevers, the Texas Music Awards 2011 Singer-Songwriter of the Year. For those of you who want to get in touch with us, we're at ragradio@koop.org. Next Friday, the nation's Christian Parenti, author of Tropic of Chaos. The week after that, probably, and it's not absolutely certain because he might have a meeting in San Francisco, and we'll know, progressive blogger and political consultant Glenn Smith, talking about Rick Perry. You've probably heard of Rick Perry, wherever you are. On September 2nd, film scholar, educator, and critic Charlie Nuffus of the Austin Film Society. And on September 9th, writer and political activist Carl Davidson on the Mondragon Corporation and the Cooperative Movement. A lot of very, very cool stuff coming up on RAG Radio. Thank you for being with us. The archives are at Internet Archive. Just Google RAG Radio, Internet Archive. Thank you for being with us.